To show you.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
I cannot do a good Donald Trump. All right, we've been recording for 7 minutes. Can we?
Oh,
beautiful. Yeah. I love it. That's great. That's great.
Let's go ahead and kick off season 7.
Oh, that's right. So we've been recording for 7 minutes. Season 7, huh? We're starting with a part 8.
Beautiful.
Great. Oh, man. We had an opportunity and we fucked it up immediately.
Awesome. We did.
Which
we
sounds
sure
about
did.
Right.
Yep.
All right, guys, let's go ahead and get started. Welcome back to another episode, the season 7 premiere of the Horrible People's Podcast. I am your host, Alex Webster. With me, as always, is Anthony Fuentes.
What is up, listeners?
And Phil Acevedo, the very valid Phil Acevedo.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Be barely valid.
Stop it, dude. Hello. It's great to be back. We're so fucking back, guys. It's not even funny.
We're so fucking back.
We've never been more back than any other time in the past.
The man behind the mask. I love that song so much.
All right, guys. We're talking about, because as we've hinted at, this is a Friday the 13th, one of our near and dear holidays here on the podcast. we're talking about Friday the 13th, part 8.
That's right.
Jason takes Manhattan.
And obviously very topical because, you know, it's only 2 days after New York's worst disaster ever. We figured we'd cover the second worst disaster ever, which is this film.
I didn't bring it up.
Webster, we live in a time, we live in an era, dare I say, where you don't have to bring it up.
No, we just fucking know.
We know it's your other holiday.
It's this holiday, and then 2 days earlier was the other holiday. We get it.
Literally, it was 9/11 2 days ago. Well, you know, depending when you're listening to this.
3 days ago, if you're listening the day this comes out.
And I sent Webster a happy birthday message.
with an airplane emoji.
They didn't need to know that part.
You opened the door, my friend.
She's not going to let you get away with just sugarcoating the story there.
I can't let him keep getting away.
It's like, Webster's all like, if I'm going down like Tower 7, then you're coming with me, buddy.
Yeah, I love how he goes for the conspiracy tower, too. That's good.
I'm going down like the North Tower. You're going down.
Wow.
Oh, we're going to hell.
Yeah, no, this is going to be a couple of those references throughout this outline. But before
Webster and Phil go to hell, we need to go to Manhattan first.
That's right. That's
we need to go to Manhattan first.
I like that wordplay there. That's good with the installments. Mm-hmm. I like that, Phil. That was nice. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, who wants IMDb? Who wants IMDb?
Go for it, Webster.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, kick us off.
All right. Jason Voorhees is accidentally awakened from his watery grave and ends up stalking a ship full of graduating high school students headed to Manhattan, New York.
Eh. All right.
Sure, dude.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. They said nothing about the boat, so very inaccurate.
Oh, no. They said a ship.
They ship. Never mind, yeah. I'm tripping. A ship full.
It wasn't a shit ton. It was a ship full.
A ship full. Graduating high school students. Once again, none of them look like they're in high school.
No, definitely not. I took the photo of our leading lady, and I was like, this woman's not in high school.
That woman's got two kids. Come on.
Yeah. Or, like, the love interest with, like, the chiseled-ass jaw. I'm just like, okay.
Yeah. And the boxer dude.
Yeah.
That boxer full is not 17 or whatever. He was, like, 30.
No, definitely
again,
not.
This is the late 80s. And most horror movies have people in it that, or most movies, I would say, most high school movies do not have high schoolers playing them.
Yeah, true.
Exhibit A, 100%.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You said the late 80s. This came out in, what, 89, right? I love how the very first thing we see as it opens to a wide shot of, like, Times Square, we see this sick-ass Batman 89 poster.
That's right. Yes. Batman 89 was right in the middle.
I was like, hell yeah, they're promoting the fucking movie right there, dude.
You're like, way to go, Paramount.
The biggest movie of 1989, dare I say.
Dare you say.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, this movie was written and directed by Rob Hedden, and it is starring Kane Hodder as Jason Voorhees.
That's right.
Jason Daggett And Scott Reeves.
Those are actors.
Scott.
Yeah.
Jensen Daggett. All right. That's the lady.
What did you just call me?
Mm-hmm. What's... Shut the fuck up, Reeves.
Kane, a.k.a. Box... the big red machine hotter.
Yeah. Box office. Oh, our first typo. We have a budge of $5 million.
Oh, look at that.
And... At least it doesn't say bulge.
It would have been a lot cooler if it said bulge.
I know.
Dude, the bulge for this movie is $5 million.
That's crazy. It released on July 28th, 1989, as previously mentioned, and it grossed $14.3 million, which is crazy.
Yeah, that's not a lot compared to
for a
most
part
of these
eight.
Movies.
Yeah, for a part eight, I'm surprised it broke. It like made a profit.
That's a good point. Very, very, very,
July
very good 28th,
point. 1989. We're babies right here, literally. I was like a year and a half older here.
Two out of three of us were definitely babies. That's right.
Yeah.
I was an egg.
Just chilling
were,
under the egg.
You were not even an idea yet.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah, all right.
Sparkle in my dad's eye.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Shit.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, let's... sparkle away over to this outline here.
Please.
Let's see. We got a New York Minute, baby. Well, it's play-by-play time to kick off the season. Why? Because this one is dumb. Possibly the dumbest movie we've ever opened a season with. So let's see why.
Oh, boy.
Yeah,
I think it might be.
I do want to note, this wasn't supposed to be the season premiere, but no. We realized our break coincided with a Friday the 13th, so things got shifted.
Yeah.
And I really was very excited to cover this movie for years, actually, on this podcast, if you've heard me talk in any other Friday the 13th episodes. And it turns out I actually hadn't watched this movie in that amount of years, so this was an experience. So. Anyways, we open to a montage of 1989's New York City with punks loitering on the sidewalk, pre-mutation Master Splinter chilling in that little fucking canister, junkies shooting up in alleys for a very, very long shot.
Oh my God.
And the song The Darkest Side of the Night playing over our credits, performed by Metropolis. This is as much NYC as you will see for a while in this film.
Oh my gosh. I will say, the saying, I look like a drowned rat, is, I've decided, is admittedly a compliment. That was a very cute drowning rat.
Yeah, that was, it was shiny. Shiny rat.
Very shiny. It was adorable. He was just like posing for the camera and everything.
Oh, it was his big break.
Mm-hmm.
Also, yeah. Before we get too far, I just need Phil to hit that New York City.
Do it.
New York City.
Thank you.
Ah, okay, because
when you really are the worst podcast host in New York City.
The most devious.
That's great. See, this is going to be we're going to be waiting a while before we see another New York City in here. So, yes, good.
Final season of What We Do in the Shadows is coming out soon, really, too.
That's
by the
true.
Way.
Yeah. Very, very true. Mm-hmm. Anyways, we jump back to Camp Crystal Lake on the New Jersey side of the shore, where a senior couple of future cadavers are having sexy time on a boat. Or at least they're trying. Yeah, that's right. Mm. They're part of a school trip on its way to, Phil, give it to me.
New York City.
Very
yes.
Good.
But
I do want to note, 4 minutes till tits in this movie. I checked.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
That's good.
I checked the timestamp.
Yeah.
I love
four.
See you
yeah,
pulled a you
bad.
Pulled a fill because that was the next line right here. But decided to give us our first titty shot immediately after the credits. Way to go, Webster. Way to take the fucking torch.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
I love it.
It's okay. If there was any Phil does it for all the movie references and you do it for the titties.
Oh great.
Get it.
Cool.
Totally get it.
Awesome.
Yes. Now
titties.
In the process of said titty shot, we get a classic lore drop from Discount Timothy Chalamet, who also drops an anchor that inadvertently resurrects Mrs. Voorhees' baby boy. That's right. It's electricity yet again.
Oh, God.
It's lazy.
It's this movie, the script is lazy as fuck. That's for sure.
My God. The acting, there's so much, but please continue.
Possibly the worst acting in the entire series. I think you're with, exactly. Well, we learned the character's name is Jim, and he's a prankster One with a surprisingly accurate replica of Jason's hockey mask. Battle damage and all. I guess they just sell that shit out there. Now, Jimothy fake stabs his girlfriend Susie, but gets real stabbed by harpoon-wielding Jason, who indulges in his favorite pastime, stopping teenagers from having sex. That's right.
Cock blocker.
Yeah, there's going to be plenty of that coming up in this movie,
at least,
for sure.
At least Michael Myers lets you get it in before, you know, you get murked.
Oh, yeah, he lets you finish. You're like, that's true.
I'll just stand here and watch, bro. Do your thing. But I'm going to end your life right after.
But if you go to that kitchen, you're fucked, just so you know, in a whole different way than you were seconds
ago. Get your noodle wet right before I fucking stab you, dude. Go ahead.
This would be double. Oh, no. That would have got way worse. Anyways, in this particular instance, though, Jason does walk away with Jimbo's organ, so that's pretty good. Anyways, Susie also gets real stabbed soon after, and Jason chills out till daytime, where we meet a whole new cast of future fodder. And there's a lot of them in this movie. There's a lot of deaths, so we're going to go through quite a few.
With this girl right here is probably one of the worst ever, though, man.
She'd be screaming, man.
It just felt like something out of like an SNL skit or something.
Okay. Thank you so much for bringing this up, because when I was watching this, I was just like, oh my gosh, this is where the cliche comes from, where like the hapless victim is just laying there, not fighting back, not trying to get away, just laying there like, no, please don't kill me.
Oh my gosh.
Seriously.
And I was like, wow.
It's like, what's your strategy to survive? Just scream and that's it.
You could have gotten up.
Like that. Just got up. Forgiveness. Like I was like, wow, that's crazy.
It was a real life. It felt like an Austin Powers of Michael McDonald's in front of the steamroller.
It really felt like that. Basically,
he's like, no.
That's exactly what it is.
Absolutely. Yeah, it happens again and again in this movie. It is bonkers.
Oh yeah.
Okay, Dog Day Afternoon.
That's right.
Very good movie.
I see what you're doing here, Webster or Fwenster, with the titles. Very good.
I'm digging it.
I'm seeing a pattern here.
Are these all movies that take place in New York?
And entertainment that takes place in New York.
Oh, okay. Very good. All right, keeping it moving. It's morning, and it's time to meet possibly the most boring protagonist in a Friday the 13th franchise, the aquaphobic Rennie. She is being chaperoned by her kind English teacher, Colleen, and her asshole uncle, Charles McCulloch. Uncle Charles is no Xavier. Instead, chastising the seniors and being especially dickish to his niece, who does live with him, by the way.
We're getting so much exposition in just, like, these 10 minutes that we get here.
it's like, literally boring, too.
It's boring as shit. Like, it's so bad.
It is.
It's crazy. It's also just, like, for nothing. Like, it's like we're introducing these characters and giving them elaborate backstories just for them to literally be murdered, like, 20 minutes later.
We're going nowhere with this.
So did you get all of that conflict? Because it takes up a surprising amount of dialogue as the film continues. Next, we get our male protagonist, Sean Robertson. These are the most vanilla-ass names.
McCulloch, an exotic fucking name right there,
dude. Charles Colleen.
Carlos McCulloch.
Anyway, who is the pouty son of the very respected captain of the SS Lazarus, if that wasn't a fucking omen? So the ship drops.
Message.
The camera pans and it shows the SS Lazarus and might as well have just been like someone popping out. Message.
Yep.
The ship does drop anchor with the Lakeview High School Class of 89. And oh yeah, Jason fucking Voorhees, who, as Fwen wrote, Jason fucking
Voorhees is a jolly good fellow, yes.
I was thinking more, this is the Michael Jackson counterpart, Jason Voorhees.
Oh, that's a good one, too.
Oh, that's good, that's good. Damn, sadly, I can't come up with one. You guys, those two good ones right there, those are good.
It's okay. It's our first episode of the season. Not everyone's going to be firing on all cylinders.
Yep.
Jason Voorhees,
a little ring rust in me.
Who is notably not a senior at that high school. So
fucking phony.
Yeah.
Weirdo.
As kids do. I do want to say before we move on, this boat is supposed to be a houseboat. It's not. like they say it's a houseboat, but like this is the most like repurposed, like
World War II
budget cut ass fucking.
It survived Pearl Harbor. Now it's repurposed as a high school.
I think I saw this. Yeah. I think I definitely saw this boat in Christopher Nolan's Dunkirk for sure. I absolutely saw this in Dunkirk.
It looks like a research vessel or something. I'm like, I have seen houseboats. This is not a fucking houseboat. I haven't been on a houseboat because I'm poor, but I know what they look like.
That's how I was thinking too. I was like, what kind of boat is this exactly? What was it before it became a high school field trip ship?
Yeah.
This boat would be the Free Willy boat in like 2 years, so it's all good.
Yeah.
They filmed an episode of NCIS on this episode, or on that ship at some point. Anyway, keeping it moving. So kids are going to do as kids do. Kids be making out, dancing in the disco hall, generally acting like high schoolers while we get yet another exposition dump with our two main characters, who clearly have the hots for each other. Sean is soon again cock-blocked by the skipper and, of course, dear old Uncle Charles. Damn it, I fucked up.
Yeah, it's okay. That was a good delivery. Damn.
First episode back. It's all right.
Hey, it's okay. It's okay.
It's okay.
Sean is soon cock-blocked by the skipper, and dear old Uncle Charles chooses this moment to berate Rennie while being spied on by a film student. Great.
Yeah.
You know, really, who's film student's a bad name? this fucking dork. Dude.
Oh my god. I kind of dig his outfit, though. I don't know why.
I will also say Rennie's outfit is also like, I'm like, okay, this is, fashion is cyclical. This is pretty cute. I'd wear this.
Yeah, right? I'm like, some of this shit's coming back. That's for sure.
Or like
it's like the, it's when hair metal was at its peak.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what? Excellent segue, because this does transition to a musical interlude from JJ, the guitar-playing rocker girl and film nerd Wayne, who has a crush on the prom queen. Kill surprise.
Did you get all this story, listeners? Because they just keep hammering these weird conflicts.
There's a lot going on here.
There's a lot of no Jason.
There's a lot of no Jason. And you know
what? No Manhattan still.
Listen, we'll get to that also. I had a beef with this fucking movie. So this JJ was immediately my favorite character because she was snarky and fun, which immediately means, as we're going to get to in a moment, she was marked for death.
Oh, absolutely.
Wayne goes off to do the prom queen's bidding in an effort to get her to like him, leaving JJ all alone to practice her guitar riffs in like the below deck section of this ship, which again, this is 1000% a research vessel or a military ship. It's like, this is not a houseboat.
No.
Fun fact, it's actually the boiler room where Undertaker and Mankind had the boiler room match back in 96.
That is absolutely.
Exactly.
That's 100%.
Square foot for square foot. That's definitely the boiler room.
That's for sure it.
Elbow drop would have saved her ass, honestly.
So she's living her life like she's in a music video, which I love for her. However, because she's alone and a girl, Mrs. Voorhees baby boy gets some screen time. He kills her with her own guitar, and we don't even see it. Thank you, MPAA, you bitch.
Yeah, there's gonna be a lot of these cutaways in this particular film.
I know. For a rated R movie, that's nuts.
I know. Seriously.
Coward.
We're gonna talk about it.
Speaking of cowards, dude, Fwen gives me a title that I have no connection to. Sex in the City Bound Cruise Ship? What is this? Is this a movie?
Sex in the City?
Is this a sex... It's a Sex in the City movie? Bound Cruise Ship?
Also, it's Sex and the City, I believe.
Whatever.
No, I think it's Sex in the City.
No, what? It's Sex and the City.
Really?
Google whatever. It.
Oh, so it's totally Sex and the City.
Oh, wow. So I got a total botched title. Thanks, Fwen Serino. Of all the New York titles you could have given me, you give me Sex in the City, Bound Cruise Ship. Couldn't give me Home Alone 2, Lost in New York, dude?
Coming up.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. That's awesome. All right. Anyways, here's my portion of the plot breakdown here. So, Jason leeringly finds his way to our protagonist, Rennie, weirdly watching her dress and then dropping a hallucination on her, scaring her dog, Toby, who has the only right idea and flees the fucking scene. Jason's powers here are, of course, dynamic.
They really are. He's like, how about I draw some acid in this fucking room and see what she fucking does?
Which is very crazy. Yeah, that's what kills him at the end of the movie. Spoiler
alert. Right. Yeah, hilarious.
It's a different kind of acid, but yes.
There's some funny... There is for sure a lot of, like, weird shit that, like, Jason is doing in this movie compared to the other films. For
seriously,
sure.
Yeah. His powers expanded for sure.
Dare I say this is the Thorn trilogy of the...
Oh, God. I was going to say, Jason, like, listened to some Pink Floyd during this time, and he was like, fuck yeah, dude, let's do that.
He's all tripping out while he's waiting for these teenagers at the fucking nighttime. So, like, comfortably numb.
That's hilarious. Okay, so two thirsty broads watch the men box. That's funny. These being the aforementioned prom queen and Kelly, who in her first role as her equally thirsty nerd friend. Really? Oh, wow.
That's Kelly who?
It is.
Yeah.
I know because I saw her and I was like, she looks familiar. And I was like, oh my God, it's Lady Deathstrike.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Kelly who, man.
I'm just making that connection right now. That's funny. That totally was her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Super young.
Yeah. So they both try to indulge in top dollar toot before being interrupted by suspected narc Rennie, who is just looking for her dog. That's it. Dude, oh man, that, like, there's nothing cooler than two high school chicks like, hey, you want to hit a cocaine?
they really didn't get the lingo down. Whoever the screenwriter was.
No. Yeah, it's so funny. Where was I? At the same time, Jason is looking for his next victim. The guy who just got his ass kicked in a boxing match, of course. Jason does the deed with a sauna rock. Yeah, good death. Which will award points for creativity, even if it looked like ass.
It did.
It looked bad. Yeah.
I will say the way you wrote it does make it sound like Jason fucked a rock.
Oh, wow. That is hilarious.
He does the deed with a sauna rock.
He tapped that rocks his cheeks, dude.
Yeah. The way, you know, with is a very, very dynamic word, I would say, for sure. Yes.
All right. So, prom queen gets caught doing drugs by Uncle Charles, who for some reason needs to see the school project of the already graduated senior during grad night. Sure, whatever, dude. Fine.
Yeah, okay.
I thought that was so weird, too. I was like, what are these guys, on these fucking kids graduating? What do you mean?
Isn't this fucking grad night? Yeah. Like, and he's just like, well, you got one more project. Like, bitch, I threw the fucking cat.
That's hilarious. Our grad night was at Disneyland, and it's like, I'm just trying to picture my teachers like, hey, dude, I know you're fucking having fun on Indiana Jones, but I need to see that fucking paper, like, right now, dude. I need to see that book report.
Ours 15 was minutes, also at Disneyland, and I didn't see a single adult from my school until 2 a.m. when I had to leave. Like,
I saw, like, one throughout there. No, I think that was it.
No Disneyland for us. Las Sierra was poor, baby. It was poor.
And this is the good old times in Disneyland. This is the time where you can get hit by a fucking tour bus and still sue them without the Disney Plus subscription. So you can get away with all
this shit. Without Disney being just like, oh, no, you actually gave us permission to kill you.
Yeah, exactly.
When you signed up for Disney Plus.
Signed up for the free trial of Disney Plus. Yeah,
this is before Disney Plus, so you can sue them anytime if you got injured at Disneyland.
The year that I went was the last year they had Bugs Land in California Adventure, and I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Webster, I'm not gonna lie. I don't know what Bugs Land is.
It was Bugs Life. Like, they had a Bugs Life.
It was in California Adventure?
Oh!
Yeah.
I never went to there, but...
Bugs Life is an underrated gem, and people need to appreciate it more.
It's a good movie. It's a good movie.
What kind of ride was it? Was it like a roller coaster?
No, it was a little kid ride, but also, like, the way they built it, it was, like, basically, like, you know in Bugs Life how you're, like, walking through grass? This is so besides the point. I'm digressing. But, like, it's like you're walking through, like you're on the ground walking through, like, big blades of grass, like you are an ant. It was very fun, and they had a little, like, kids ride, I think, mostly, but it was the caterpillar. It was very cute. That's all.
Cool. Ooh, okay. All right, cool. Fwen, you know something I learned today, dude? Alex Webster, certified 9/11 girl and certified Bugs Land connoisseur.
Yes.
That's right.
Hell yeah. Yep.
But and there's another name out there too that surfaces to describe Alex Webster, but it's the first episode back. We're gonna save that for another time.
We're gonna save it. We're gonna come organically, okay? Let it come organically.
You know what? The girl that I'm dating calls me that.
No way.
She calls me. She calls me 9/11 girl. She calls me a predatory lesbian.
Yes.
She is listening right now. I am sure of it.
I love this. Oh, that's hilarious. God. That's
okay,
great.
Okay, and then now
this.
Bugs Life Broad. All right? Bugs Life Broad.
Bugs Life Broad.
Did she know
that's
it?
A good one. Bugs Life Broad.
Phil and I are always going to be Beaver Bros.
You guys are Beaver Bros
that's
to the end.
True.
Absolutely.
That's true. Beaver Bros.
Honestly, we get the best nicknames during Trash Month, so this year's is going to, I'm
that's
sure.
That's very true. Oh, yeah. I can't wait.
Does it involve me?
I can't wait.
They all involve you, Webster. Every single one of them involves
you. It's not fun if it doesn't involve you, though.
True.
Come on.
Anyway, let's keep it rolling.
Oh, yeah, the movie. Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah. Jason, Friday
so
13th.
Boring.
That's right. I legit fell asleep for like a good 10 minutes. And I'm like, oh, we're still on the fucking boat. We're not even in New York yet. Oh, God. Anyways, all right. So, where was I? Okay, here we go. She plots a way to blackmail Uncle Charles, and as a bonus, she shoulder checks Rennie into the water. Oh, that's fucking... Yeah, I remember that. Who struggles against ghost baby Jason while submerged. Sean gets her out because the plot needs him to, and Uncle Charles is pissed, of course, and as always... Oh, and our creepy prophetic old man lets everyone know they're gonna die.
This happens in 5 minutes. Oh, this all happens in 5 minutes.
It's hilarious, dude. It's just funny how, like, one thing leads to another. I was like, dude, let's just get to the fucking fireworks factory already, dude.
Charles is so pissed the whole movie for no goddamn reason.
For real.
He really isn't. Yeah. He's pissed all the time, and of course, prom queen was laughing when she was in the fucking water. She's like, dude, she can drown. She's like, oh, this worked out perfectly.
Yeah.
She thought she was going to narc on her cocaine use. Yeah, this is a stupid fucking movie.
It's funner when we say it out loud.
I know. It's so funny, dude. Seriously.
That's hilarious. All right,
let's continue here. Rennie hallucinates again via foggy mirror and the old water blood switcheroo. Ghost baby Jason just can't stop and he just can't get enough.
Ghost baby Jason.
I like that. Prom queen shows Uncle Charles her school project, ultimately, of course, like any prom queen should, of course, which is an anatomy lesson with her own body.
Surprisingly good drawings, I must say. She really put the effort there.
The art department popped off with that one.
And this, of course, leads Uncle Charles to give in for a few minutes and tries to back out, but not before film nerd Wayne catches him in the fucking act. Mm. And, of course, Uncle Charles threatens his future film career before storming off. Yep. Wayne uses his opportunity to make his confession, but gets dismissed immediately. As he wonders, Jason peeks into the hallway, possibly also wondering what the fuck was the point of that scene.
Jason's chilling in a closet, and he's, like, eavesdropping. And he's like, okay, who the fuck of these morons do I kill first? Like, that's the thought process.
Yeah, he's literally that Michael Jackson gif of him just eating popcorn at the movie theater. Like, I think he's kind of indulging and enjoying this fucking teenage drama that's going on.
Before
he ends their lives.
Before I torture them, let them torture themselves. This is pretty bad.
Exactly.
I like the whole, like, you're not even going to get into film school. And it's just like, if they're seniors, they should ostensibly all already be enrolled in school if they're going to school the next year. Like, what?
Right. All that. Their school projects are still due.
Yeah.
But they're talking like, school's fucking out, baby.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
Yeah.
And even more so, like, if this had come up later as a plot point, like, I was taking mental notes. Like, I was like, is this going to come up? Is this going to be like a narrative hit later in, like, beat later in the film? No, it's not, dear listener. It was not.
No, a lot of these things go nowhere, which, fun.
Yeah.
Anyways, The Last Days of Disco is my little title right here, and that's right.
Nice.
So instead of going for Wayne, Jason decides he's had enough of the prom queen's mean girl mannerisms and takes her out with broken shards of glass after barging into the bathroom mid-shower scene. Psycho, this is not. This is not Psycho. We'll tell you, that was a lot sloppier than Hitchcock, that for sure. Now, of course, Mrs. Voorhees' baby boy quickly moves on to his next victims, the captain and the skipper, who are soon discovered by our dynamic duo of Sean and Rennie. Now, of course, after Sean has his Simba moment, he finally does the emergency announcement. All it cost him was a dead papa. Good work, Sean. Way to go, buddy. Now, of course, mid-Mayday, Jason destroys all communications and all of our machete victims are gathering in a room complaining about it. That and the killings. Yeah. So it's just a lot of bickering in this part of the movie. They're just, it's weird.
You're saying on top of there being a killer on the ship, we don't have power?
We don't have power.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Anyways, creepy janitor guy proceeds to outline the entire first act of the movie and pretty much telegraphs the rest of the film, telling the folks that they're all pretty much going to die. So that he spoils everything right here. Yeah, that's fun, dude. The teenagers split up stupidly and mostly meet their doom. First, unfortunately, is future Lady Deathstrike and future Mrs. Fuentes Kelly, who gets rocked in the disco room, presumably by Jay, to the soundtrack of JJ's mixtape. You know, that's just, yeah.
You know, poor gal. It's so funny. You mentioned future Mrs. Fuentes Kelly, who. Over the weekend, we saw Beetlejuice, and I thought it was going to be awkward, but, you know, Savannah held it. She was mature enough when, you know, the three of us were in the same room. Me and my ex-wife, Monica Bellucci, was in this.
Oh,
and,
she was?
She's all over the trailer, dude.
I've been avoiding the trailers. I'm going blind, baby.
I'm sorry. I did not know this.
Way to fucking drop
this,
dude.
She's all over the marketing.
Okay.
Anyways, it was, I also, you know, had an ex-wife moment,
the remaining seniors, futilely arm themselves, though, Wayne Scorsese sticks to his fucking trusty camera. He has no weapons.
Wayne Scorsese.
He's literally us, dude. He's me.
This is the Phil analog for sure. Absolutely. Turns out Cinnamon is no match for 1.21 gigawatts of electricity and a solid throw. Wayne is dead.
Yeah, that was a solid throw.
Mm-hmm.
It's really funny that we just made a Back to the Future reference and now there's another Back to the Future reference.
That's right. Power! Anyways, Jason then kills a dude in a purple jacket who probably had a scene earlier, but who knows at this point? I don't remember.
I know.
Yeah. Either way, the dude's sprinting abilities are no match for Jason's teleportation abilities. He gets caught, he gets tossed, and he dies. No electricity this time because, I don't know, budget or something. Yeah. I don't know.
They used all the budget for when he was being resurrected underwater and those flashing lights from the ship, or from that
boat. There you go. Yeah. From that one throw.
That was the VFX
exactly.
budget.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, seemingly getting lazier, Jason simply throws the only black character in the movie into the water and just assumes he's drowned.
Oof.
So, racist Jason. Anyways.
Yep, there it is.
He actually almost kills our protagonist, Rennie, in the next scene as she's chilling in her room, but she gets him away with a nail file? Sure.
No. That was the pen. You missed it. In the beginning of the movie, the English teacher gave her that. She's like, allegedly, Stephen King used this pen. And it was just like, all right. That's
right. I did not remember that fucking line at all. It was a pen. It was a pen.
Yeah,
the pen did it. All right. Way to go, protagonist.
Oh, it was stupid.
Sure, dude. Yeah. Sure, dude.
Our creepy janitor steals Uncle Charles' kitchen knife as the ship begins to sink, motivating our remaining living teens to find a raft while being pursued, of course, by Jason. They are just rushing this part of the movie now.
All the while, like a freaking climate change denier, Uncle Charles is like, stop talking about Jason Voorhees. He's not on the ship. There's probably not even a fire. Meanwhile, everything's on fucking fire.
Yep.
It's like fucking Cornelius Fudge in Harry Potter. He just stop saying he's back. He's not back.
Yeah. And then Order of the Phoenix, he goes, he's back.
He's back.
That's what we were trying to tell you.
He's absolutely Cornelius fudging this fucking movie. That is for sure.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Oh, boy. Damn. Well, the fellowship of the now fatherless Sean, already parentless Rennie, Uncle Charles, and English teacher Connie escape on a lifeboat while picking up Julius along the way, who is thankfully totally able to swim despite Jason assuming otherwise.
Jason, like, started making some really interesting statements about January 6th.
Yep. I mean, he's, the premarital sex already triggers him.
Right,
so,
exactly.
You see? Surprisingly, though, a big fan of late-term abortions, according to what he's doing with these teens. So, whatever, dude. He's got dynamic political views there.
And then he's going to end up, you know, endorsing... He's a war criminal who ends up endorsing the other side.
Oh, that's
God,
good.
Burn in hell, you son of a bitch.
next movie.
Literally. All right, moving on. King of New York.
Yeah, Nino Brown.
Wow,
baby.
Webster gets King of New York. Well, I get fucking Sex in the City.
Wait till you see your next one.
Why are you giving me all the good ones, especially of movies that I haven't seen?
Wow, she hasn't even seen King of New York or Dog Day Afternoon, Quinn. Oh my god, dude.
He did this specifically.
Those are two absolute fucking New York bangers, and you give it to the person who hasn't even seen them, dude.
It wouldn't be a season premiere without me triggering Phil. It just wouldn't.
That was beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. Oh, Nino Brown, baby.
Whatever, dude.
Let's go.
Whatever, dude. God. So, the crew row their way to New York City, like many who fled to Ellis Island in the city's long history. Though, not so much fleeing lumbering horror icons, but more like something boring like poverty.
Yeah. Fucking losers.
God. Jason swims his way to the big city as well. Swims to the big city. He swims. Mm-hmm. And is oddly taken aback by a hockey billboard. He does the little new metal head tilt and everything. He's like,
yeah.
That's funny.
It's fucking stupid. Anyway, the fellowship gets mugged by a couple of armed criminals who proceed to kidnap Rennie. These are also the only other minorities in the movie. Comprende?
Oh my god.
Jeez.
This was so, like, it's so dumb. It's like, what people think.
And it's also, empty as fuck.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's a city that never sleeps, but why does it look like it's fucking Night of the Comet where everyone's like, there's no people, like, whatsoever?
Yeah, why does it look like a Universal backlot set in
seriously,
totally not
right?
New York? I don't understand.
Like, we're all the background actors.
They couldn't hire some fucking extras, dude? I bet you in the 80s there were so many starving actors who wanted to be extras on Takes Manhattan.
Yeah. I'm sure. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Anyway, the gangster forcibly injects Rennie with drugs and thankfully gets killed before the scene can get even darker.
Yeah.
Good guy Jason doesn't last, however, and decides to chase a fleeing Rennie.
Yeah, it gets real dark in this particular part of the movie. I'm like, okay.
There's a part where I completely, like, I haven't seen this movie probably since high school, and so I was watching it in preparation for this, and I was like, is this going to continue? I don't remember.
Yeah.
And I was like...
Precisely.
I was like, is this about to turn into an Irreversible or something? Like, I was like, what's...
You're like, I just saw Monica Bellucci in a movie. I don't know if I want to look at this again.
That's the darkest movie my ex-wife was ever in, and it feels like it's getting some Irreversible vibes over here.
Yeah.
But thankfully, good guy Jason to the rescue.
Yeah.
Jason technically was a hero in this particular scene.
Yeah. He kind of was.
This whole thing was so weird, because again, it's literally just a group of white people. I'm sorry, and they're one token black character walking down an alleyway, and then they just assume people, like, this is what people assume, like white suburban moms think what New York was like in the 80s. Like, it's dingy alleyway, which, by the way, most of them are pretty well lit, I gotta say, especially in Manhattan, of all places.
Yeah, I'm sure New York, you know, in the 80s was something, in a lot of places was something like that. But
it was the murder capital of the United States for a while. That, totally. Fair,
anywhere in the 80s, dude, LA in the 80s is also rough,
too. Oh my God, absolutely.
But I think this New York in this movie was like to the 11th scale. It was like nearly Mad Max level of like a dystopian.
It's like, y'all remember New York in the 60s? 89, baby. It's 89.
Yeah. It's like right. Reaganomics times 100.
This one goes to 11. All right. Moving on. On the way, I'm assuming Jason, interrupts Julius in a phone booth, the only character who tries to call the police. But Jason is then baited into a rooftop brawl.
Oh.
And I want to emphasize, there's about 30 seconds of just punching sounds.
This is probably my favorite part of the movie.
When
I think of this movie, I think of this scene.
It's so weird, though, because it's dead silent. It's just punching noises.
A part of me kind of enjoys that, though. This is, like, something where I kind of enjoy.
That's the raging bull in you right there, dude.
I don't know. I kind of like this because it's, like, a combination of left hook, rights, uppercuts, and there's no music. You just see, like, Jason taking all these punches. It kind of reminded me of that extended fight scene and They Live for a second. where Roddy Piper and Keith David are just going at it. Music.
That's sound effects.
It kind of reminded me of that.
Compared to in our They Live episode, it's pretty much like a Street Fighter sequence. Like that's all it
like
is.
Like down to like the 2D camera sometimes.
And I think that might be why you liked it so much, Phil.
Yeah. I kinda enjoy it too because like Jason's literally just playing mind games. He's like, I'm gonna let this guy punch me until he's fucking tired. Julius's knuckles are bleeding, and he's like, oh, whatever. He's like, he gave it everything he had. He ran out of gas really quick, and all it took was Jason one fucking punch. A fatal punch that totally decapitated him. It's silly. It's so silly.
Yay, we did it. Phil called the next line.
Phil called the next... Phil called the whole next paragraph.
Yeah.
The whole next paragraph.
Stop.
You did.
Yep. No.
See? You passed the buck.
God damn it. I did pass the buck.
I gave it back to you, sir.
I'm reading it now. I am reading it. Oh, God.
So, much like Homer Simpson's strategy against Dredrick Tatum, Jason simply lets Julius punch him until he wears himself out. He proceeds to literally knock his block off in a New York minute. His head goes flying into a freaking dump or like trash can.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Jason just got shot like 6 times. A few punches were literally not going to do anything.
Yeah, no. He got capped by the junkies, and he's just like, dude, seriously?
Yeah,
seriously?
Right?
You gonna punch me? All right, buddy. Yeah. Come on.
All right, dude. Whatever makes you feel better.
Yeah, get out of your system, bro. Get him out.
Yeah.
I liked how he was even recollecting, like, his training. He's like, okay, light feet, and, he rehearsed, like, everything that he's been training right before he went toe-to-toe with Jason.
The writers really wanted this to be a Rocky movie, but it turned into a Jason movie instead.
Yeah.
Different first name title.
That's funny.
And meanwhile, a really high Rennie stumbles her way to Sean, and the two reunite tenderly with Uncle Charles, Colleen, and a random red shirt police officer. The red shirt's a good touch.
Yeah.
Anyway, the cop gets killed immediately while calling dispatch, and Rennie proceeds to run down Mrs. Voorhees' baby boy and nearly kills everyone in the process. Mm-hmm. Okay, there's a
Not
lot
a great
that
strategy.
Happened in this that I really want to dissect.
Please. Dissect it. Come on.
They all are like, they find this cop. They're like, oh my God, save us. And he's like, get in the car. There is this like almost comedic moment where all four of them are like squeezed in the back seat of this cop car. And I'm just like, okay, this is going to be comedy. And then the lights turn on. And you just see their faces. And they all just go, ah! And then you see it's freaking Julius's head in the cop car. They all run
out. Oh, yeah. A poorly constructed Julian's head.
Yeah.
It was so bad.
It was bad. And so, like, that moment was, I think, to me, a standout in terms of, like, I think they were trying to play it serious, but it just comes across so fucking funny.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a little Scooby-Doo-y. Oh, it's a little Scooby-Doo-y.
It is exactly. It is. That is such a good way to say, to compare. Yeah, absolutely.
Like if their feet were just spinning around in a circle, like that definitely would happen. Yeah.
Agreed.
So that happens. And then, of course, Rennie proceeds to run down Jason. And I posted this clip on Instagram because it is like the movie skips, but it's intentional. And frames, it's like the framing and like it, and you see this kid and the whole scene is nuts. The way I posted it on Instagram, and my caption was, "This was a choice."
Yeah, it skips like 10 frames. Like, if you're watching this for the first time, you're thinking there's something wrong with your your streaming service or your DVD player or something like that. But no, it's part of the movie.
It's on purpose.
I had to pause it, and I was like, "What the fuck is going on?"
Yeah.
So, yes, I can absolutely...
There was a creative choice there. Maybe maybe the director of this was also high on the same drugs that Rennie was. I don't know.
very, very possible.
Very, very possible. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was the 80s. Lots of heroin.
Twas the 80s, indeed. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's flashback time as we learn Rennie is afraid of water because Uncle Charles is a piece of shit and threw her into Crystal Lake in an attempt to teach her how to swim. It didn't work and, in fact, traumatized her as ghost baby Jason shows up for some reason. And Rennie unlocks her childhood trauma thanks to the power of hard drugs.
Mm-hmm. This movie's so stupid.
I know this movie's stupid. It's silly. It's something you should really just not take seriously. But a part of me was like, oh, man, Rennie should really get her arm checked. Like, who knows where that needle's been?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, she might have hepatitis
it's
now.
It's also the 80s. Yeah. I'm just like,
everyone was sharing needles at this time. I was like, this is fucking... I was like, you're going to end up like... Your arm's going to look like Jared Leto's arm in Requiem for a Dream, dude, if you don't get that checked.
Wow. That's the sequel.
Yeah. Also, a New York movie that you could have given me instead of fucking... What? Sex in the City bounced through shit, dude? Requiem for a Dream was also set in New York, dude.
What was the one you said originally that you could have had? Because Flynn was like, oh, it's later in the script. It's
not. It'll come up.
Oh, okay.
It comes up.
Okay. Oh, it was Home Alone 2, but okay. Yes. It's not the title. I will say that. Spoiler.
Dude, you know Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles also set in New York,
in the
dude?
Beginning.
That's actually, we're going to be referencing that as well. Don't worry.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's keep it moving, guys.
Okay, let's do it.
Everyone pretty much tells Uncle Charles to go fuck himself, including a now-awake Jason Voorhees, who drowns him in some kind of gross New York City sludge.
Yeah.
Peace out, Charles.
Yeah,
Charles.
Man.
Oh wow! Next one's also good.
Wow! I can't believe this, dude.
What's the title, Phil?
The title for me says "Maid in Manhattan." What movie is that? Is that a J-Lo movie?
It's the J-Lo movie,
right?
Yeah, it's like Maid, but I figured, like, I'll just put Maid.
Isn't it her and Matthew McConaughey? Or no?
Yes, man, I'm not sure.
It's like a rom-com, right?
Yeah, it's a rom-com.
Definitely a rom-com.
Love it, dude. Hell yeah, dude. Love it. That was set for me. You give me this fuck. Dude, what the fuck? I know it's just the season premiere, dude. But what the fuck, dude? Like, you know, I've been supportive of you and you're on your foot. And I get this shit, dude. Like, whatever, dude.
Hold on. Let me Google King of New York.
She doesn't even know what this movie is. And you give Webster King of New York. It's a Christopher Walken classic, dude. This is when Larry Fishburne was even Lawrence Fishburne, dude. And you gave Webster King of New York, dude. All right,
Wesley
Snipes
is in this too. That's
fantastic. He's the star, dude.
Well, speaking of Wesley Snipes, another New York City classic, New Jack City, dude. You could have given me New Jack City. No, dude, you gave me Made in New York or Made in Manhattan, dude. Whatever, dude.
New Jack City would have been good.
New Jack City is a great movie, dude.
Hold on, Day.
You've never seen Dog Day Afternoon, Webster?
No.
Dude, it's like a gay, it's an LGBTQ classic, dude. How have you not seen Dog Day Afternoon?
Dude, not all gay people have seen all gay movies.
Dude, I find that hard to believe, right? No, I'm joking. Wow. Kidding. Wow. 2024 audience, I was joking. It was just a joke. Do not cancel me, please. It was just a joke.
Get his ass. at on Instagram. It's Phil.
They're eating the dogs. They're eating the cats.
They're watching all the gay movies.
They're watching all the gay movies.
They're late term abortions.
Brokeback Mountain, great movie, great actors.
You do a much better Trump than me.
Yeah, that's true. It's good. Pretty good.
Anyway, I was just saying that just to get under your skin. But anyway, please continue.
Made in Manhattan. Starring Jennifer Lopez. God, I hate J-Lo, too. God. Anyways, she sucks. I'm team Ben Affleck all day, baby. But whatever, that's a whole other conversation.
Yeah. Speaking of the analog for Jennifer
Ben Affleck. Oh, you could have given me Daredevil. Also set in New York, dude. No, I'm wake me up. Wake me up inside.
I can't wake up.
Dude. Dude, Daredevil, Jennifer Garner, dude. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. 2003 classic. Colin Farrell, Michael Clark Duncan, dude. That movie's Daredevil does not get enough love. That movie kind of fucking rules. It's a misunderstood gem. I've been defending Daredevil 2003 for a long time.
Anyways,
Made in Manhattan. I ran. I went off for a second there.
Okay,
anyways.
That was me about Bugs yeah. World.
We did have a moment. Season premiere, baby. It's season premiere.
We're gonna tighten this up before next week because next week we need absolute fucking focus.
Oh yeah. Anyways, so Sean and Rennie are, alas, about to share a kiss. Hell yeah, dude. Before being cock-blocked once again by Jason Voorhees, who chases the crew through the subway. Considering it's a New York City subway, they were the only ones panicking while Jason strong-arms his way through the junkie-infested train cars. I like how he just shoulder-pushes this one woman.
Oh my god, it's the best.
This movie has, like, some iconic moments. That's one of them right
there. That's definitely one of them. She's like, ah!
it's like the fucking audacity. Plus, that fucking hurt, you asshole.
It's like a combination of those. They stick with it for a while.
Yeah,
like the shot sticks with it for a second.
Yeah, it does. It does. Like I want a movie on just that, on that character. Right
her story the whole way through. Absolutely.
The origin story. Let's get a prequel of just that character. Anyways, the duo hide and get the jump on a casually strolling Jason, tripping him and sending him to the middle rail of the subway. But, as noted in the first pair of the outline, electricity does jack shit to Mrs. Voorhees' baby boy, and he pretty much just enjoys a nice little, cute little nap.
Mm-hmm.
The surviving classmates at least see Times Square for the very first time, but are stalked once again by Jason, who is also in awe of the city. I like how Jason has a little moment where the fuck am I, dude?
Yeah,
that's actually pretty nice.
I will say it was really it was kind of nice to see Times Square in the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because now it's the equivalent of fucking Hollywood Boulevard in LA.
Is it like a fucking dystopian fucking...
It's just crazy ads everywhere, and it's like people, like just random ass people dressed up in costumes character costumes taking photos with tourists. Like when I was there a couple years ago, I was like, wow, this is hell.
Isn't Phone Booth set in Times Square? Oh, Phone Booth. Another New York fucking movie, dude. Wow, dude. Wow. Could have given me Phone Booth.
I think it was the Upper West Side, but I don't remember where exactly. Yeah.
In this movie, in Jason Takes Manhattan, I really do appreciate a couple of cool shots right here that we get in this sequence. I think there's a dolly tracking shot that circles around Jason.
Yeah, that's cool.
And there's a part where the two classmates think that they're scot-free, and then she spots him. And in the foreground, out of focus, you just see some New York bystanders just walking past the frame. But then you just see Jason, I believe on the right side of the screen. Really cool shot. Fun stuff happening in this sequence. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Stuff that I kind of appreciate here.
Yeah. By the way, also, I live down the street from Hollywood Boulevard now, so I can attest to lots of ads.
Do you really?
Lots of cool hidden stuff.
All right.
But yeah, you see some of the weirdos. It's very interesting.
Thank you.
Speaking of weirdos here, Jason goes out of his way to kick the boombox out of a bunch of white hip-hop loving teens and one skinhead, let's just say.
Definitely one skinhead.
That's like one punk rock song away from saluting fucking the Third Reich or something, dude. he looked a little neo-Nazi, if you ask me.
Yeah.
But instead of killing them, he simply shows them his face, and the punk kids run in terror. It's like, hey, it's cool, dude. Whatever.
I know.
Tough guy one second, and then Running Little Bitch is the next.
I love how Jason walks so slow, but he for some reason he kicks the shit out of this fucking boombox.
Yeah,
like he's really like pissed at the fucking boombox. It's so out of character, but it's awesome.
I think I sent you guys a meme, this one Jim Phil Nation meme, where it's like me after work and kicking some stupid broccoli hair kids' tripod at the gym.
Yeah. I think you said that to me, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Sean and Rennie make their way to a diner, putting staff and patrons in danger, of course, possibly seeking the help of Master Splinter and a corvée of teenage reptiles. The duo escapes to the sewers of NYC, but this is not Jason's first rodeo. No. The crew run into a maintenance worker who warns them that the city floods the sewers with toxic waste every midnight. Pretty much spelling out our third act resolution. Now, this toxic waste is a good little MacGuffin here, in a way. Anyways, the maintenance worker doesn't last long, of course, and gets an off-screen death, as he should, you know. Sean is knocked out in the process, but Rennie happens upon some acid or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a natural tone of mine. There we go.
It's pretty much like a paint can, and you can't really tell, but it just looks not right. Like, it basically, if this was a video game, it would have an aura around it.
You can pick up this item. You can pick up this item.
Yeah.
Press A.
Yeah, I like how she has, like, a plastic, like, flashlight, but she's managing to, like open the lid of it with her flashlight. It's a big metal container. It's physics, you know. I'm not even gonna talk
Dare
about
I
physics.
Say, yeah, about we're with thinking this movie. About this too much.
Yes, we yeah. are. We certainly mm-hmm. are for sure. Anyway, so whatever it is, it unmasks Jason and puts him in a drunken haze. That's nice. The duo manages to hold off our hockey mask killer, who succumbs to the regularly scheduled toxic waste dump while Rennie and Sean look on. This reminds you of the toxic waste dump that our homie from RoboCop took in the first RoboCop movie.
Good call. Absolutely.
Yeah. Jason reverts to his ghost baby form or something. Sure, dude. It doesn't make too much sense, but whatever. The heroes live. Jason corpses lies in the Ninja Turtle training grounds, and our two protagonists share some affection and chill with Toby the dog, who's just the cutest.
He's the adorable dog.
He's the best character in this.
That was so crazy, because like at the very end, you're just like, Toby! And I'm just like, oh my god, I forgot this dog was even supposed to be here.
And this is, of course, where we cue The Darkest Side of the Night and a weirdly empty Times Square. Credits!
Weirdly empty, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
We did it! That was the movie! Wasn't that a movie, guys?
That was certainly...
It was something.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, that was a movie. I'll give it that.
Well, I put most of the energy in the play-by-play because there wasn't a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff on this
one. What do you mean? How could this be?
Hey, most of our Friday the 13th movies have a lot of backstory, but this one, they kind of shut it out. They kind of shut it out.
Entry. How many times can they be like, Jason's is horror iconography? Like, there's only so many times.
Well, let's see what little they gave us. So, my title, of course, is Lost in New York. There you go.
Great, dude. Cool, dude.
Okay, so the last movie failed pretty bad. And the planned trilogy of films featuring our knockoff Carrie never happened. By the way, listen to that episode again, Phil. We were on it that day. That was a good one.
Yeah.
Missed Webster on it, though. We missed you.
Yeah. For which one?
For Friday the 13th Part 7.
Ah, yes.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
I remember this.
Yes, we came up with a lot better ideas for movies than that one, for sure.
I do remember that, yeah.
Oh, buddy. Well, still, there were many competing scripts from the people who worked on The New Blood, including the director and lead actress. Paramount read these and turned their asses down. So, first turn their asses down of the season, baby. Because we got it. Now, the team went with first-time film director Rob Heaton, who also wrote the film. A big, sprawling, set-piece-driven movie with Jason murdering folks at the Statue of Liberty, Brooklyn Bridge, and Broadway. Hell, the iconic boxing match was originally written to take place in Madison Square Garden.
That's awesome.
That's a much better movie. Paramount did not really want to spend that much money, though. So they expanded the whole cruise ship story in the first act to the majority of the movie. As for the New York parts, well... that would actually mostly be Vancouver and Los Angeles. So, yeah.
Of course, of course. Mm-hmm.
Fun times, fun times. Now, the team did get permission to film in Times Square, where onlookers were going wild over the scenes being shot in the city. Kane Hodder, yeah, who had to pretty much beg to reprise his role as Jason, by the way. He remembers pointing at a fan between takes and making them faint.
Yeah. That's cool. That's
he still looked pretty scary. That's a good-looking Jason,
at
least.
It's a good Jason. I believe he's
a great Jason. He's fucking huge, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe this is the same Jason. I could be wrong. Maybe, Jamie, we want to pull this up. I think this is the same Jason that during promotion for this movie was in the Arsenio Hall show.
Yep, he was
for this movie, right?
I didn't include that, but you're 100% correct.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, well, look at that.
There you go.
Dude,
there you go.
Bro.
I didn't even have to pull it up. You
brought up a good fact there that I forgot to put in there. Way to go, buddy.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. That's just raw fucking. Yeah, this movie sucks, but it is a fun one. It's one that I kind of admire. So yeah, but we'll talk about
I agree.
That.
Yeah, we'll definitely get our take on it because I am also mixed, but also yeah. But in any case, when it came time to promote the film, the city of New York hated the posters of Jason slashing through NYC iconography and almost sued Paramount over unauthorized use of the iHeart New York logo. Yeah.
Wow. Boo. Yeah. Which is so funny because when they did Scream 6, like they were just like, oh, we're going to use all the New York iconography.
Right.
And like New York was just like, yes, Mr. Ghostface, yes.
Different times. Yeah, definitely, definitely. But you know who hated this latest entry in the Friday the 13th franchise? It was the MPAA, who slapped it with an X rating many, many, many times before the kills were, well, butchered. You can find some of the kills on YouTube, but the quality is poor and the director's cut is out of the question because they basically destroyed all the dailies.
What'd they do? They just took the fucking film and lit it on fire?
It's Paramount, so probably. Yeah. Now, aside from the city of New York and the MPAA, you know who also hated this entry in the Friday the 13th franchise? It was fans and critics.
Oof. I was going to say literally everyone.
Yeah. So, give it to us. I actually labeled you guys here. You both share this section. Phil, you blue. Webster, you red.
You're making the kids work together. That's great.
Absolutely.
I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Ew, I have to work with Phil. Ew.
And what do we got? We got Whiplash. All right, finally, a decent movie.
We got a good one.
Yeah. Webster, have you seen Whiplash?
Yes, I have.
She's the J.K. Simmons in this, by the way, though. So you were Miles Teller for sure. You were absolute Miles Teller in this relationship.
Okay. Not quite my tempo.
Whatever, dude. Here's what I think about your tempo right here, dude. All right. Oh, boy. This is pretty bad. So, Friday the 13th, Part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan, ended up going far over budget and became the most expensive film in the entire goddamn franchise. It needed to make some serious money to be considered a success, and it did not.
No. Oh, no, no.
That's
crazy.
Did not. Hi, Mark.
It did not.
Hold on. The 2000, is this?
No, the most expensive up to that point.
$5 million? That's crazy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Jeez.
Anyways, your turn, Webster.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I got distracted by box office numbers. The misleading marketing and heavy edits to the series' signature gore hurt the film with critics and audiences alike. Let's see how the former reacted.
Okay, so this, of course, where on Rotten Tomatoes, it scores a whopping, beautifully orchestrated 11% on the tomato meter with a critical consensus reading, quote, Jason terrorizes a ship and nearly sinks the franchise in a clunky sequel that feels like self-parody without the charm.
Whew.
Damn,
ooh,
dude.
Rotten Tomatoes, that was a harsh one.
Damn, that was
boy.
It's fair, though. The LA Times states that the movie was, quote, as witless and willfully imbecilic as any of the preceding seven, unquote. While the New York Daily News stated the film was, quote, grossly underutilizing its promising premise, unquote.
That was nice of the New York publication.
Right.
Could have been a lot more brutal.
Imbecilic more. I'm gonna
that's
use
a good
imbecilic
one.
More.
Yeah, calling someone an imbecile is like... Yeah. pretty. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty scathing insult.
I don't call Fuen imbecile enough. I think now is the time. Yeah, I think.
Yeah, you know, Phil imbecilically always co-opts the next line of the fucking outline. See, that's a good use of it, right, Phil?
Whatever, dude. All right. Yeah, I believe it's my turn. Now, when it comes to fan response, Jason still doesn't do that great. And we can get a good look at this. A good look, not luck, at this on Letterboxd. Of course, Letterboxd, dude. Friday the 13th Part 8 has a 2.1 out of 5 rating from a total of 16,000 reviews.
Wow, that's crazy. That is an Alex Webster special, only that's I didn't pick it.
Yeah, exactly. That's how we premiere this bitch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, go for it, Webster. What you got, dude?
PD187 gives the film 4.5 stars, saying, quote, God damn it, Fuen. This opens on a shot of the Twin Towers, setting up a very different expectations for how Jason will take Manhattan.
Yeah.
I had to get one more in there.
Fucking awesome. That was brilliant, Fuen.
Thank you.
I'm gonna give you that one. That was really good.
You're both imbecilic.
See, that was pretty good.
I'm many things, Webster. Imbecilic is definitely one of them. let's see. Amaya with 3 stars says, quote, I forgive everything bad about this movie because Jason single punches someone's head clean off and it flies away into a bin.
Great.
Yes, that is. Yeah, that's a beautiful scene, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it.
Jade Talks Too Much awards the movie, again, 4 stars, saying, quote, considering 70% of this movie takes place on a boat, boat emoji, I feel like they missed out on a huge opportunity by not dressing Jason up in a little sailor outfit. Would have been adorable, unquote.
It would have been, then, dude, I mean, she pointed that out. Something that I think we all had a major problem with is the fact that this movie takes, most of it takes place on a boat.
Yeah, I'm glad that came out because hold on, let me read the text that I sent to the chat because I watched it right beforehand. Yes.
Please.
This is just like shockingly little of this movie takes place in Manhattan.
Yep.
True. Very, very true. Phil?
Okay, so Jacob Knight gives it 1.5 stars, saying, one of the most inexplicably awful studio movies ever made that I still find insanely rewatchable.
This is a hangover movie.
Oh, it's such a hangover movie. It really is. Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Absolutely.
This is a movie you can put on and doze and wake up when your DoorDash arrives and just be like, this is a good time.
Like, you're throwing up in the bathroom and the movie's still playing. You don't want to. You don't bother to pause it.
No.
You just don't bother to pause it.
No.
You're like, fine, whatever. Hair the dog afterwards. I'm good. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, Basket Case Joel with no stars says, quote, Jason does not take Manhattan, unquote.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-mm-mm. He does
not. True. All right, and Jason Takes Manhattan was considered one of the biggest disappointments in the summer box office, notably not releasing on a Friday the 13th and losing out overall the year to the likes of, oh, look at this, Halloween 5, Nightmare 5, and Fright Night 2. Not a great year for horror.
Oof.
Well, hang on, dude. Hang on, dude.
Not a great year for horror,
Phil. I don't know. Dude. I just read what's on the script, right?
You're Ron Burgundy?
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, see? I got to commit to that one. See, we got it on record now.
Whatever, dude.
I do want to say, I know you immaculately picked out some Letterboxd reviews. This 2-star review is like the second review, and I laughed out loud reading it because I always read like Letterboxd reviews after I watch a movie if I want to giggle.
Mm-hmm.
2-star review from Jordan James. Jason takes his time to get Manhattan.
Yes.
To get to Manhattan.
I saw that. I was considering leading up with that one, but I'm like, I'm putting too many Letterboxd reviews.
No, they're so funny.
They're good ones.
Reading Letterboxd reviews for bad movies is just a salve for my soul. It's so funny.
Oh, yeah. They get creative. They get creative. Absolutely.
Nice.
Anyway, the series would take a much longer than usual hiatus as Paramount would end up selling the series to New Line, Home of Freddy, and give us another divisive entry a few years later, Jason Goes to Hell.
Mmm.
This is when the rights issues get particularly messy, but we'll get to that on some other Friday the 13th. I can tell you when the next Friday the 13th is. It's the day before my 30th birthday.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Is it really? Right.
Yeah, June 13th,
2025.
Oh, dude.
Damn.
Yeah.
30? Dude, hang on. Come on, tell the truth.
What?
42. Come on, dude. Stop, dude.
Wait, no. There's a Friday 13th in December.
Oh, I think I missed one then. Damn.
December 13th?
Oh, no. I'm sorry. Freddy versus Jason is the one before my birthday.
Ah, I see.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. Anyway, for now, it's game time, baby.
Ooh.
It's time to play the game.
Ah. I knew it.
Ha ha ha. I'm talking about that meme. You guys
I know.
Have seen that meme, right?
Yep. Oh, yeah. You've sent it plenty of times. Some good application of the meme, for sure. I
love that meme.
Which meme?
I'll send it to you.
Oh, you'll get it. It's great.
Oh, it's so
really,
good.
Really good.
So good.
Yeah.
This guy has a hell of a voice, and I sent you a couple of him actually...
When he was actually getting down?
The Tupac one that he did.
Dear
really
Mama?
Good stuff. Yes, mm-hmm. Dear Mama.
Dear Mama
really
was good.
Actually, that actually slaps. But anyways, Webstar, we'll
so
send it
confused.
To you. Yeah, we'll send it to you. After
yeah,
one,
for sure.
Done.
Okay. Well, we got a different game right here. We got a different game.
Yeah.
It's Jason on the road, baby. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jason didn't exactly utilize his New York City setting, but that doesn't mean he doesn't deserve another vacation. For the premiere, we're going to make Mrs. Voorhees baby boy go all Carmen Sandiego on us and visit various parts of the earth. I have several locations that I'm going to run through that Jason can quote-unquote take. While what I want to know from you is the following. Who is the protagonist and how about their love interest? What three landmarks / attractions / rites of passage must Jason visit and kill in? Bonus points for specifying a kill. What souvenir does Jason pick up? And how does he get taken out? So, if you can give me these things, I have a separate doc with several locations here. I will judge each based 1 through 5 and tally up the points for each of you.
Oh my
you
God.
Ready?
To six have... rounds?
I mean, we don't have to go the whole 6 rounds. We can see.
You remind me of the teachers in high school who would have one question and then 6 sub-questions to that one question and have it technically count as one question.
Yeah, I'll take that. That's fine.
Fun fact, I've been asking for a Where on Earth is Carmen Sandiego movie for like at least 2 decades now. And back in the early 2000s, I've wanted one. When I first thought of this idea, I thought Angelina Jolie would have been a great Carmen Sandiego. But, you know, it's been 20 years now. So if I were to pitch this movie, they'd probably want, I don't know, Jenna Ortega now or somebody. Somebody.
It would definitely be Jenna Ortega. Yeah, it would absolutely be Jenna Ortega. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Also, okay. You've been thinking about this for 20 years. Wow, you're so old.
I am.
How imbecilic. Well,
I think Carmen San Diego is Carmen San Diego something from like the 80s, no? Or
90s.
Or
90s. Yeah, early 90s.
I remember
90s.
Carmen San Diego.
So yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't there a cartoon? I think there's a cartoon.
It was a cartoon. Absolutely.
An animated series.
The game.
The books.
Yeah. It was the whole thing, yeah.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I was like, dude, Angelina Jolie would be a great Carmen San Diego. But,
yeah. But we got a Carmen San Diego Jason Voorhees right here.
Let's do it.
You ready? All right.
Okay.
Each of you, so... you know what? Actually, only 3 rounds. I'm going to give you each different ones, though.
Okay.
So, right. Phil.
Oh, God.
Actually, yeah, Phil. This will be a fun one. Jason takes Las Vegas.
Ooh.
All right. Okay.
Thank
not
God
so bad.
He didn't give me that one.
All right.
They're going to get more absurd as I go.
Well,
so
no,
just
it's like
remember
I've never
that.
Been to Vegas, so I'm just like, I don't
okay.
know.
All right. Yeah. So, who's the protagonist? Okay, I'll tell you who the protagonist is. Can I throw in 2 protagonists, dude? We're going to go with Johnny Depp and Benicio Del Toro.
Wow.
Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. Who's the love interest? Good damn question. LSD is the love interest here.
damn, I thought you were just like straight shot going to say like Johnny Depp and Benicio Del Toro.
That's hilarious. What 3 landmarks, attractions, rites of passage must Jason visit and kill in? Okay, so movie starts off with, we're going to start off with an exterior shot. It's going to start off with kind of like how Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas already starts off with. It's in the desert, right? Johnny Depp and Benicio Del Toro, they're high on drugs. But this time, instead of driving in the daytime in the desert, they're driving at night. All right? They pass by Tobey Maguire because they're not even going to pick him up. They learned already so about hitchhikers. However, they do find another hitchhiker. And this is... it's not going to be Jason Voorhees because that's just like, oh, yeah, let's not pick up Tobey Maguire. Let's pick up this fucking hockey master, right? So they stop by. They pick up... let's go with Cameron Diaz because she's in the movie, too.
Okay.
So they pick up Cameron Diaz. The 3 of them, I guess she can be like the love interest. I guess she's secretly banging the 2 of them somehow in the movie.
Okay.
So, however, but in order, they get to Las Vegas, right? They go to, they want, these guys are old school, so they go to like more like Old Town Vegas. They go to Vic and Anthony's for a nice juicy steak, right? And however, the Benicio del Toro has like a drug fucking, you know, he goes a little Karen, right? Because he's like high on drugs, like, this steak is not good. This steak, hey, who the fuck is the chef? I want to talk to the chef. And then Johnny Depp's like, hey, settle down, man. Relax. Like, no, fuck that. This is the worst steak I've ever had in my life. Goes to the kitchen, finds the chef. It's none other than Jason fucking Voorhees in the kitchen.
He's
wearing an apron and everything, dude. If he didn't wear a sailor suit in this one, I'm going to make him wear a chef's hat with a fucking apron in this one, dude.
Is a rat going to be controlling all of his moves inside the hat?
Yeah. With Mrs. Voorhees' soul in it, in the rat.
Oh, there you go. Okay. Yeah. I like it.
What souvenir does Jason pick? Oh, that's just one attraction. After that, they go to Circus and right there, and they go to Cirque du Soleil show. That's three locations, right? One of the performers doing the Cirque du Soleil show stunt is actually none other than Jason Voorhees, too. So he's over there being all artistic and being all the feng shui with the Cirque du Soleil show. But then once again, dude, Benicio del Toro is going on a drug rampage. He's dissatisfied with the performance, throws a tomato at Jason. And Jason's like, what the fuck? So he goes out into the crowd and he fucking starts pulling, and he starts chasing the two of them all over Vegas. What souvenir does it pick up? Well, dude, when we go to Vegas, what gets handed to us all the time? Porno pictures, dude. So that's the souvenir that Jason's going to pick up. How does he get taken out? Good freaking question. Okay, on the Stratosphere, there is a sketchy-ass fucking roller coaster. And he chases our heroes, our protagonists, up to the Stratosphere Tower, and that's where he falls and plunges to his death.
Okay. All right. So that was a pretty comprehensive one. I'm going to actually...
You had so many... Yeah, because Phil always, like, he's very elaborate with his, like, theoreticals. It's very entertaining.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Thank you.
You know what? But you only gave me two landmarks instead of three. So point down.
I said three. I said Vic and Anthony's, Circus, and Cirque du Soleil, a Cirque du Soleil show.
That's three.
Okay, fine. Three. All right. You know what? Good. Okay, fine. I'll give you a solid four for this one. Solid four. I think that was pretty good. The sketchy. You know, no strip club. That seems like it would have been a good thing to throw in there for Vegas. Nice. Yeah, but it's okay. Nice. It's all right. We had enough titties at the top of the movie, so we're good.
Strip club would have been nice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Webster.
Yes.
New Orleans. Ooh. Jason takes New Orleans.
Okay. Ooh. Who is the protagonist? I am going to say a hardworking, down-to-earth 55-year-old jazz musician.
Oh, all right.
Love interest, their saxophone. This theoretical protagonist in my mind has a saxophone, and it's going to come and go during the movie. And the whole point is this man's trying to get back to his saxophone. Because as everyone knows, according to some people, saxophone is the sexiest instrument.
There you go.
Yeah, hell yeah.
What three landmarks, attractions, rites of passage must Jason visit and kill in? First one, just right off the top of my head, the Lottery Mansion. I'm going to say our protagonist or some fodder, probably tourists, find the gate to be unlocked and are like, oh shit, let's sneak in. I bet you we could maybe we could see some ghosts and sneak in. Again, just so everyone knows, the Lottery Mansion is a private residence. Don't do this. And sneaks in, and lo and behold, Jason is there. Jason has a bunch of Mardi Gras beads around his neck. It's very thematic. Oh,
of course he does. Yeah, absolutely.
which means he's been flashing his titties, just so everyone knows. And some finds
underwater rotten titties.
Yeah, his waterlogged tits. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Waterlogged tits is the name of my autobiography.
Good. That's really good. Waterlogged tits. Talk about jugs.
Anyway,
nice.
anyway, so that's one kill. So basically, I think they're gonna break in and they're gonna see Jason against the wall and think it's like a statue. They're like, "Wow, this person must be really obsessed with spooky shit." Lo and behold, it's real Jason. Jason kills them. Second attraction. I'm gonna say. So, for those of you also who don't know, in New Orleans, there's a very famous beignet shop called Café du Monde. Café du Monde is open 24 hours, or, like, it has, like, really insane hours. I think our protagonist, in search of his saxophone, it takes him to a Café du Monde. And there is a tussle, and this is one of the instances where he does, in fact, lose his saxophone. Jason also really wants his saxophone for reasons yet to be determined. Maybe it's a magic saxophone. Who knows?
That was like a magic saxophone. That's pretty good. Okay.
Yeah. So that's two. For number three, gotta make this good. I'm going to say a jazz club. These are all things we did when we were in New Orleans.
I know, you're just recollecting a whole vacation but putting Jason
in
the background.
These are all like things that I do every time I'm in New Orleans, and so it's nice. Fair. So I want to say, you know, it's this is actually probably, if I'm going to organize them in chronological order, this is probably the event that kicks off the whole shebang. Jason somehow, probably through the catacombs of New Orleans, somehow Palpatine survived. Somehow Jason is in New Orleans, and the stumbles into a jazz club, which are kind of hole in the wall places anyway, so it's very easy to stumble across one. Okay. And he goes in, and him, our protagonist, and his jazz band are practicing, and just kills all of them, and he gets away with his saxophone. And this is the beginning domino of a series of events that will lead him to you know, struggle with himself and also try to find his saxophone. So nice. Those are three. Souvenir that Jason picks up. Alligator head. Like a little taxidermy alligator.
Oh, hell yeah.
There you go. She brought the gators in. I was waiting for that one. All right.
I'll get there eventually. How does he get taken out? Bronchitis, much like myself.
When I was in New Orleans. That was the worst. That's good.
It fucking sucked. But all right.
Bronchitis. That's the first time a disease is taken out, Mr. Voorhees. So, you know what? Yeah, I was. You really brought. I was hoping for a gator tour.
Okay.
But you know what? Because of waterlogged titties, I'm gonna give this a five.
Ooh.
Sure. Waterlogged titties really sold that for me. I think there's only time for two more. So you each get one different one. I was gonna do another city, but no, we're gonna go weird. Okay. So Phil, for you, Jason takes the border.
Oh my god, dude. Jesus Christ, dude. Okay, our protagonist. Let's just go with let's have two protagonists. One on each side. One's a border patrol, and one is someone who's trying to, you know, cross over here. Ooh. Alright, border patrol lady. Alright, strong female character. Is played by, you know what? Just because it's her time to die in one of these movies. Let's have Jenna Ortega be the border patrol lady.
Your obsession with Jenna Ortega, and I know you hate her, but...
No, she's gonna be one of those, like, Latinos for Trump in this movie that I'm gonna fucking spill out. She's like those border patrol who's like really loves her job because she's really trying to stop immigrants from coming here. She's like that. Her character's like this. I'm not saying this is Jenna Ortega. I'm saying this is the character she's playing. So, the person who's trying to cross over here is the child of the Latino kid who was originally one of the campers for Camp Crystal Lake. He is the child. He's the offspring of one of those douchebags, right? Okay. Let's just say in an alternate reality, Kevin Bacon survived. Or... or before he got killed, you know, he impregnated a Mexican woman who started a whole new life Mexican Mexico. That child is born, turns out to be our protagonist, right? However,
Carlos Bacon.
Let's just go with that. Yeah. And then, he's trying to start a whole new life in America. Meanwhile, mean Jenna Ortega, Border Patrol lady, is like, not on my watch, motherfucker. And, however, two of them coincide. They meet at the desert, like, after he hops the fence. Jenna Ortega's on a Jeep. It's the middle of the night. She's got a big flashlight. And then she's like, oh my god, I think I see them. And then they're running. She's like, stop or I'll fucking shoot. And out of nowhere comes big bad Jason Voorhees, dude. Si, señor. Not today. Si, señor. Orale, cabrón. Chilaquiles. And then, dude. So he does not care. He's on no one's side, right? So at first he gives Jenna Ortega character a beautiful, gorgeous death, R.I.P. And now is after our main protagonist. Let's go with Carlos Bacon, and he thought he's successfully crossed over. He's like starting a whole new life. I'm gonna work my ass off really hard. Apparently there's Haitians out there that are eating cats and dogs, but hey man, I'm not like that. I'm here to make an honest living, and I'm here to make some money. And but first I gotta get through this fucking Jason guy who's fucking chasing me over here. So three landmarks he goes. What kind of fucking landmarks are you getting together?
Landmarks or rites of passage.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Let's just say he gets caught, right? Boom. Jenna Ortega's called it in before she got murked. So some more Border Patrol people came in here, right? He gets taken into custody and into the inspection area. So he's taken into like this facility area, right? And right there, he's being questioned. But just like 1984's James Cameron masterpiece Terminator, the whole power just goes out. Psh, no power. Dude, fucking all lights are turned off. It's fucking Jason. He's murdering all these fucking cops. They're shooting at him. They're doing nothing, dude. But he just wants one thing and one thing only, and that's Carlos Bacon. And so he's fucking going through all of it. He's going through a bloody rampage, and then Carlos manages to sneak himself out of the fucking attraction, takes one of the border trucks, flees it out, dude. Just flees it back into the U.S., dude. American soil, baby. He thinks he's home scot-free, not knowing that Jason is riding Cape Fear style underneath the truck the whole time. He makes it to LA. Dude, they both make it to LA. Freedom, baby. Freedom. They're now in LA. He gets in contact with like some of his like family members who have been living in LA for years now. And then he goes to his abuelita's house, like, oh, look at you look just like your father. Hands him over a photo of Kevin Bacon.
I was gonna say, like, do we get a legacy character?
We do. We do. Mm. You do. And we go to... We're in East L.A., dude. We go into East L.A. Landmark number two is La Palma tree from fucking Blood In and Blood Out, dude. That's the fucking major tree right there. And Jason's just stalking him the whole time, all right? Landmark three, we're just going to take it to the L.A. River, dude. That is where they're going to have a climactic battle between Carlos Bacon and Jason Voorhees. They're fighting away. And the way Jason gets taken out is Michael Bay was shooting ambulance and his head gets chopped off by one of the helicopters that's going underneath the LA River Bridge.
Okay.
And,
all right.
Yeah.
That's a good. That's you actually managed to turn it into a whole border journey. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, that's me.
But what souvenirs does he get? So we know how he gets taken out.
Well, souvenirs. I'm trying not to get racist here, but then again,
quote of the episode.
So, you can get playfully racist.
So I think a souvenir that he picks up here is that, you know, he's in East LA. He's fucking having a great time, you know, dude. He goes to all these amazing eateries. Not only does he get like the usual food truck tacos and stuff like that, but a souvenir that he picks up is, he finds the, what do you call? Oh my god. He finds a Prius, a Toyota Prius, a killer. The driver of that Prius is like a real piece of shit, like North Hollywood piece of guy. It's like, hey buddy, this is not your lane. He gets out, he starts pestering Jason, fucking takes the Prius. And he finds his, instead of teleporting, because, you know, he teleports a lot in these movies for some reason.
Yeah, which helps during traffic,
we're
for
not
sure.
We're not going to help him teleport, dude, in this. He's just going to fucking drive that Prius everywhere he goes. He's going to stalk him.
He's
going to
drive
like,
a
everywhere.
Prius?
Yeah, the Prius is his souvenir.
Okay, I like Prius Jason a lot. Prius Jason, you gave me the journey from the border to Los Angeles. I would have liked Jason in a Border Patrol outfit, but it wasn't really his job, so it's totally fine. shoot. You know, I'm going to give it a good creative kill, too. You get a 5 also. Okay. I'll give you 5.
Oh,
I'll give
thank you.
Five.
You thank
five.
You.
So 4.
Oh, my gosh. Hell this yeah, is setting dude. Us up for a perfect tie, Phil.
We'll see.
Oh,
we'll
man.
See. Because.
Oh, we'll see.
Webster, you get this one. You get Washington, D.C.
Oh,
Jason takes Washington, D.C.
okay.
On election night.
Dude.
On election night.
Oh, my God.
On election night. That's right.
Oh, my God, dude.
Yep.
Have fun with this one.
Yeah, for real. protagonist Nancy Pelosi.
Protagonist? Oh, God.
The final girl's supposed to be able to run, Webster.
and generally a good person.
Exactly. It's all part of my plan. okay. So the protagonist, Nancy Pelosi. Love interest yet to be determined. Three landmarks, attractions, rites of passage. Obviously, White House, because it's going to be a shit show. He's going to visit the White House, and there's just going to be hordes of people. And I think because we previously determined he's a conservative earlier in the episode, I think it's gonna turn into a bit of a stop the steal moment, and we'll see. We'll see what happens. A bit of a January 6th, if I do say so myself.
Oh, I love the stop the steal moment right there. That's great.
So, obviously, White House. I'm going to say he pushes someone with, like, a Love is Love shirt down the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. and then, finally, I think he's going to steal the Declaration of Independence.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that's a souvenir.
Yeah.
That's a souvenir.
Yeah, that's a souvenir. So he's gonna break into the National
Hell
Archive,
yeah.
And he is going to steal the Declaration of Independence. How does he get taken out? He kills Nancy Pelosi at the Washington Monument, okay? It's a huge thing. It turns into a January 6th moment, just systematically kills Nancy Pelosi. But how does he get taken out? It's Bernie Sanders with a steel chair, baby.
Oh, shit.
My God.
My
God. It's Bernie Sanders with a steel chair.
Bernie Sanders comes out behind him, completely unsuspecting, whacks the shit out of Jason with a steel chair, falls again down the steps of the Washington Monument, and actually, Bernie Sanders is our final girl.
Bernie Sanders, secret final girl.
Oh, my God.
All right. That was good. That's a 5.
Oh,
that's
shit.
A 5. You
I
won.
Win.
You win. That
you
was good.
You know
that
the thing? You know the thing? The thing about Jason Voorhees is... he's a mama's boy. I don't like mama's boys. They gotta go. The mama's boys, they gotta go.
We need universal mamas.
Yes. Mrs. Voorhees was a terrible person, and she's gotta go too. And I don't like mama boys.
Oh, that's good. Okay, good Bernie impressions. All right, Webster won this one.
Yay.
Way to kick off the season right there.
Woo.
You ran with the... the election night. The other two options that I was going to have was Universal Studios Hollywood and Tokyo.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, but we're a little longer.
Cool.
Yeah, that was good. Right. Especially because I've never been to Washington, D.C., so I was just like, oh my God, what historical monument.
No, I like how you almost turned to national treasure there, too, but with Bernie Sanders.
I did for a brief moment. I did, once I said Nancy Pelosi, I'm like, she sucks, and I was like, oh, I'm going to find a way to shoehorn Bernie
You're like,
Sanders.
I'm going to fucking pull the rug out from these motherfuckers.
Hell
there we go.
Yeah,
okay, all right. I mean,
time check, we're just over 90 minutes.
Oh, cool. I about to say, we're going to wrap this up super fast. How about our thoughts with a rating on Jason Takes Manhattan? And your history with it, you know? Let's wrap it up. Because we've been talking about how we feel about the movie the whole way through.
Sure. I think it's very clear how we feel about it. I'll go first, really quick. 2.5 stars. I thought it was fun. I think it was very down the middle, like, fine. I don't like. I think it was bad, but in an enjoyable way for the most part. I'm kind of going in between two and 2.5, to be perfectly honest with you.
I'm with you on that one, yeah.
That's
the first time watching it too, huh?
Yeah, first time watching it. I think. So when I say that I am a Friday the 13th girly, I am like the first and second Friday the 13th girly. Everything after two, I'm
kind of... So you're not a Friday the 13th... Hold on. That does... How are you... You gotta commit to the bit, Webster.
Oh, for sure. I'm committing to the bit in the sense that, like, I haven't seen all of them, but I am still, like, I love... Like, I am not a Freddy person. I am a Jason person. Yeah. That's all.
You call yourself a Jason person, but you haven't seen these movies.
She's seen eight of them. She's seen eight of them.
I've literally seen eight of them at this point.
Okay, eight of them. But you say you're only down for the first two?
No. I mean, so... Okay, so the first movie is what introduced me to Jason, what immediately I was like, Jason's fucking awesome. And even though, obviously, it's Mrs. Voorhees in the first one, not even Jason, but bear with me here. I thought it was a really great, like, I love, like, summertime cabin slashers, so I really liked Friday the 13th.
Yeah, and Carlos Bacon's father is in that movie.
Yeah, absolutely. How could we forget Carlos Bacon, right?
Carlos Bacon's father.
But no, like, it was also one of my very first horror movies, so I just have blind loyalty. If I had seen Halloween first, it probably would have been Michael Myers, but it wasn't, so sorry.
Okay.
All right.
That's just the way of it, I fear. I have...
For sure, Friday the 13th girly. That's what you called yourself, right? I'm going to start calling you that.
Okay.
We'll go with that.
Sure.
Friday the 13th girly.
Sure. Right. I like Bugs Life Broad is the one that's sticking from this one.
Bugs Life Broad's good, too. That was fun. That was fun. I'm just going...
I know.
That was fun. But I'm agreeing. I'm going with
the two. Friday the 13th girly or a Jason girly, I'm gonna start calling you a Myers dick writer.
Oh,
but
that wouldn't be. That would not be incorrect.
But I was just gonna say though. But you're saying like it's like an insulting thing, dude. I'll agree with you. I am a Myers dick writer. I call him Daddy Myers for a reason.
Phil's like, do you not know the history of this shit?
Being a Friday the 13th girly. We've come to a consensus.
What's your thoughts, Phil?
Thoughts?
Same as you guys. Yeah, I think I'm gonna go with the two on this. I think this is like my second, maybe third time seeing this movie in my life. Saw it in high school, and I was just like an edgelord guy who was already getting into movies. I was already appreciating my horror movies and stuff like that. I always thought it was like cool but stupid. Even at 17, I thought this was like cool and stupid. There are worse. I think there are worse Friday the 13th movies than this.
The last one, for
but
sure.
I think, this one's silly. I remember when. I think I saw like a marathon around the time when Jason X came out, and I remember watching this in order for myself to get prepared for Jason X as a kid, and I was like, yeah, this one's kind of dumb, but I kind of like, there's some cool things here. There's something here. It's got some weird heart,
I guess. It has a weird heart. I would say that. That's
something.
A good...
It's got something
yeah.
there.
Yeah. I'm with you on
it's
that
It's got
one.
A weird charm.
Say, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a cool one.
It's maybe a little too long.
It is, though. It's literally an hour and 40 minutes.
Shave 15.
Yeah, and the fact that a lot of it takes place on the boat.
Yeah. Shave 15 off the boat.
Yeah, that was my big thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly.
A lot of it takes place on the boat.
Mm-hmm. That's a big flaw. I'm going to give it a 2.25. Yeah. 2.25. I have nostalgia goggles for this one. It was one of my favorites as a child, for sure. I grew up in a horror family. I grew up watching scary movies since I was very, very little. And this one was always like, oh, it's the New York one! And then you'd be a kid, you'd be fucking enjoying, you just sit down, alright? You only get titties in the beginning, unfortunately, but still, you'd watch the movie. And,
Yeah,
it just, seeing as an adult, I'm just like, it is a really inconsistent movie. When it's fun, it's very fun. It's very fun. But what is boring is boring as shit. So I'm
lot of exposition dumps where it's just like, okay, we get it. I don't know.
There was no point to a lot of it, too.
This movie went in a lot of different directions all at once in a very...
Dare I say, rudderless. It was a rudderless
movie.
Wow, dude. Wow,
dude. I had to get a pun in there, baby. Season premiere. Rudderless in parts, but...
Oh, man. All right.
Well, should we end on that note, or...
Sure. I say it's fine, but
It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's fine. But with it. Yeah. All right, what do we got? Season 7 time, huh?
Season 7 time. Thank you guys so much for joining us for our Season 7 premiere for Friday the 13th, Part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan. Next week, we are talking about another sequel that I think is arguably better than this one. I'm very excited. It is a franchise that is near and dear to my heart. While
you're more of this girly, for sure.
I was going to say, I am more of this girly than I am a Jason girly, by far.
Oh, that actually sounds better, too. Okay, never mind. Yeah, we'll get to it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because it's an alliteration. There's your hint. So join us next week for that. I'm very excited. It'll be very nostalgic and also sad.
Yeah.
So join us next week for that. In the meantime, if you want to stay up to date on the latest and greatest of all of our podcasting shenanigans, you can find the network, Horrible People's Network, on Instagram at HORRORBLE People's Podcast. I have another podcast. Fwen has another podcast. Other friends have other podcasts. We have something for the whole family. Not your family. We're all very vulgar people.
Hell yeah.
And if you want to follow the podcast itself, we are on Instagram at Horrible People's Podcast. That is HORRORBLE People's Podcast. It feels so good to be saying that again. You can follow Anthony, his gaming podcast, on Instagram at NPC Gaming Pod. Is that correct?
NPC.gaming.pod.
Thank you. I thought that was it, but I didn't. I chickened out at the last minute.
You're like,
NPC.gaming.pod. You can find me on Instagram at Ghost Coffee Shop. And you can find Phil on Instagram at Phil Acevedo. You can also find him on YouTube at Phil Acevedo. Anything exciting on that front, Phil?
Not a whole lot. Still in pre-production for this short film that's fucking killing me already, but whatever. Hey, dude.
I'm so excited. cool. Thank you guys so much for listening. And in the meantime, let's see. Don't have premarital sex. And don't get on a boat that looks like it's a retired military ship.
Or do those. Exactly. Or do all that. It's fine. Or do all those things. It's
Unfortunately,
all good.
It's too late for me. Bye.